Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show. Today, Premier League. Liverpool march on towards the Championship. Same for West Ham. League Cup. Surprisingly faithful recreation of corporate culture as City boys post surprise loss but still get the Villa. We round up all the midweek drama and have a big look forward to the weekend and a thorough roundup of the transfers. All the big moves featuring players we've definitely heard of before that your club has insisted on buying in today's Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Live and in the studio, bringing you facts and stats and all that. We've got Duncan Alexander.
Hello, James.
Hi, Duncan. Speaking of villas, James Horncastle, just back from Florence.
Yes, James.
Nice. And Nick Miller, you went to the East End of London.
I did. Less villas there. Fewer villas there.
Fewer villas. I say James Horncastle, but I'm looking at you with your beard and your thick glasses and your long hair. Looks suspiciously like a famous footballer in disguise.
Ah, De Rossi, yes. You're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was the story of the week for me, because Daniele De Rossi had always dreamed of going to the Rome derby, well, standing in the Curva Sud and watching it among the Roma ultras. And because he's a Roma hero, he gets mobbed everywhere he goes. So he couldn't do that. Instead, though, his wife decided that, because she's an actress, bring a film makeup artist in and basically concoct this big disguise for him. Spent hours in the makeup chair so no one could recognize him. You're saying that I look like the kind of person that Daniel De Rossi became in disguise, with the beard, the long hair, quite grey, big nose.
That was the joke. Yeah.
They put a wart on his nose, didn't they?
They put a wart on his nose, it's true.
He was kind of cat weasel-esque, he said, in a reference destined to fall.
This just gets better and better, James.
Jack Lang of this parish said he looked a lot like Jay Mathis from Dinosaur Jr. That's a relatively niche reference, but look it up. Jack nailed that one.
All right, then. Four games since we last spoke. Arsenal
too
got
much football, James.
I mean, enough football. Four big games in three big competitions. FA Cup, Arsenal get the win at Bournemouth. Liverpool take another step towards the title Wednesday in front of Nick Miller. And two League Cup semi-final second legs as Villa made it through to their first final in 10 years to take on Man City, who haven't been in the final for 12 months.
Trezeguet with an extra time goal. We've seen that before.
We have. Right. Let's begin then with the League Cup.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Wednesday night in the League Cup semi-final, Man United with a 1-0 win over Man City, who still go through 3-2 on aggregate to their third League Cup final in a row, their fourth one in 5 years. Wow.
They certainly enjoy League Cup finals, don't they?
I guess they do.
It's weird, though. I remember being a kid and looking back and seeing that Liverpool got to four in a row in the 80s and thinking, oh, I wonder what it was like to live through such a period of fairly moribund consistency. And now we know. It's late February, early March. City must be in the League Cup final, and there they are.
On the subject of the team that actually won this game, and hear me out here, but that's now two victories at the Etihad that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has engineered. Plus, he's the only man to take points off Liverpool in the league.
Yeah, manager of the year in many respects. in some respects, possibly not. I mean, he's only the third manager to ever win two away games against Pep Guardiola after Jose Mourinho and Jurgen Klopp. But, I mean, 11% of United's wins this season have come at the Etihad, which is a hashtag nice touch.
Interesting. How much, though, Duncan, was this new beginnings for United, or how much was it poor finishings for City?
Yeah, pretty much the latter, really. I mean, they seem to be on a competition to see who could make the most ridiculous miss.
And who won, do you think?
I think in terms of quantity, Sterling probably got there. And obviously he's got this record, he's never scored against Manchester United, and it did almost seem to be playing on his mind at points. He was spurring some great chances, and Kevin De Bruyne was getting frustrated with his entire team at various points. There was a point right at the end, so United 1-0 up. Basically, Otamendi commits a foul right in the D. And there's an amazing clip of De Bruyne just looking at him like a dad, very disappointed with his child. He's like, what are you doing? Like, basically, United down to 10 men after Matic was sent off. Didn't really look like they were going to get the second goal that would take it to penalties. And then they were presented with an amazing chance.
That was very much the theme of Kevin De Bruyne's post-match interview as well. He just gave off a vibe of, I can't believe I have to share a pitch with these idiots.
Yeah.
I don't really understand it, you know, for him. I mean, United did nothing today and they score out of one free kick where the ball is not cleared really well. And then I think even we didn't play our best football. It should have been like 3-0 after 15 minutes and then game over. But yeah, we were so wasteful today.
My favourite miss, I think, was David Silva's.
Right.
Which was just this kind of, it seemed to be the sort of natural extension of Pep Guardiola's teams being, you know, you must stick to the plan, you must not act on any instinct at all, even if that instinct is shooting with the, you know, 10 yards out with the goal clear, almost open for you.
So in terms of new beginnings for Manchester United, James, an emphatic no.
Right. What are Claudio Bravo's stats on conceding with the first shot on target again?
He does it very regularly, and he did it again in this game. He's
right.
Done it in, I think, the first shot he's faced in every competition this season, pretty much.
Wow.
So,
it's a talent.
Yeah. It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's softening up
the
opposition.
I'd put that on my sizzle reel when I'd be like, you know, sort of pitching myself to other clubs.
Yeah, you say there's not enough goals in football anymore? Well, get me involved, because, yeah.
Remarkable. Guardiola says he will play in the final, so there's that.
Who?
Villa
Pat?
Fans. No, Claudio Bravo.
All right.
Claudio Bravo. Okay, dramatic week for Man United. Aside from that win, there was also the extraordinary business of United fans throwing flares into Ed Woodward's garden, which, you know, has been rightly condemned.
Rightly condemned, although I did see one person say, these aren't football fans. And I thought, well, that's a bit of a long shot if they're not. I mean, they are football fans. They're just misguided football fans.
It's just the classic thing that everyone always says, and this was the kind of extreme example of it. These guys can't be real football fans. Well, what were they doing there if they weren't football fans? It'd
yeah.
be even weirder if they weren't football fans.
Maybe they're just neighbours of Ed Woodward who... just don't. I don't know.
Oh, do you think he kind of sort of leaves the bins in a messy fashion outside or something?
I don't know.
Or he might want planning permission for what, a new greenhouse?
Perhaps so.
But parish council taking a dim view.
He's put garden waste in the green bin. Woodward.
Well, I don't want to make light of people throwing incendiary devices at the domicile of especially one who's managed to successfully buy a football player this week. Bruno Fernandes signed from Sporting Lisbon. For a lot of money, which may rise to even more money.
Mm.
I think 68 million is the potential fee. Played 5 years in Serie A. How much of an impression did he make on you in 5 years in Serie A, James?
I think he only started to deliver on his potential when he moved to Sampdoria. And even then, it felt like they were cashing in quite cheaply on him at the time. And it was also a bit of a strange decision, we felt, when he went from Samp to Sporting, going back to Portugal. Having said that, he'd never really played there and had spent a lot of his time in Italy with Novara and Udinese. But certainly you got flashes of his passing ability, his knack for the spectacular as well, but certainly haven't seen the kind of influential player that we come to associate him with at Sporting, where
right.
his numbers just kind of absolutely exploded and has seemed for, I'd say, 2 or 3 years to be much better than that league and has been, I think, deserving of a move. But yeah, I think it's still somewhat of a surprise that it's a move to a club of the size of United, but deserving, certainly deserving of a big move to one of Europe's top five leagues.
All right, 25 years of age, player of the year in Portugal the last two seasons, set new records for scoring goals from midfield, and he'll what, slot into a kind of number 10 role behind a lone striker, will he? Is that how?
Yeah, you'd think so, or even play as an eight, play off one of the wings, but I think United will have signed him to play off a main striker and offer both a kind of sense of invention and, as we've mentioned, goals as well. United fans go to Old Trafford to be entertained, and he's certainly one of those players that can deliver that kind of entertainment.
Well, we'll have more red-hot transfer talk coming up, but up next, Villa time.
See Aguero last night?
Yep.
What a finisher. Eh? You know, I don't know how he does it. Half the time I can barely finish my...
sentences?
Yeah, that's what I...
Mint?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, is it me?
Yeah.
To celebrate Aguero's finishing prowess, Paddy Power is offering money back as cash on all markets if he scores against Spurs. That's right, as cash. Money back specials from Paddy...
Power.
Yeah.
All markets on this match only. £10 max cash refund, pre-match singles, online exclusive, no shot bets. T's and C's apply. 18+ begambleaware.org.
on Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere. This is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Rousing scenes Tuesday night in the League Cup semi-final as Villa defeated Leicester 2-1 to reach the League Cup final for the first time in a decade. Emotional scenes, pitch invasion, clearly meant so much to them. How much did it mean? Let's now speak to Villa fan Dan Bardell of the 1874 podcast. Hi, Dan.
Hi, mate. You okay?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. Still buzzing from Tuesday, to be fair.
Right. You guys go to Wembley almost as much as Man City do, though. So why were the celebrations so spirited?
I think, obviously, the last two times we've been to Wembley, it's been for playoff games, for playoff finals, to try and get ourselves back into the Premier League. It kind of felt like on Tuesday that we are back, that we're making a statement, that we're obviously a big name in English football, but we have been in the doldrums for a number of years. So I think Tuesday was just a big statement to say Aston Villa are back. We mean business. And for us, the League Cup's a trophy that we've had a big affiliation with over the years. I mean, when I was young, I saw us win that trophy twice in 1994 and 1996. And I thought that must be what it's like to be a Villa fan. This must happen every few years. And it hasn't happened. So we've been starved a little bit of success since 1996. So just the chance to try and win some silverware is a massive thing for the Villa fan base.
Right. You've been through a lot, clearly. Just out of interest, what has been the lowest point for you as a Villa fan in recent times?
It has to be the season we went down with 17 points, because I travel from London for every game, for every home game. Got my season ticket, had it since I was seven, and I was travelling there every week, didn't miss a home game, knowing that we weren't going to win and that there was nothing to play for. It was the lowest of the low. I mean, you don't need me to tell you, 17 points out across the entirety of a Premier League season is pretty miserable. And from then, we've had good seasons in the Championship. We've had good times. But just to be back in the Premier League again, it's where we feel we belong. I mean, no one's got a divine right to be in the Premier League. But until then, we were ever present. And we obviously think we're a big club. So to now bounce back and feel at the other end of the spectrum a little bit, obviously we're in a relegation fight in the Premier League now. But this will give us a bit of momentum. And it's got the feel-good back. That was what got us up last season. It was the feel-good across that second half of the season. And hopefully this getting to the final now will galvanise us through the second half of the Premier League campaign.
It does look as though there's a little bit of an uptick in maybe not performances, but certainly results for Villa.
Yeah, we're on a decent run at the moment. I mean, obviously Man City, who I'm sure we're going to talk about, they thumped us 6-1 a few weeks ago. But since then, we've been very good. That could have completely derailed us. I was worried that game was going to see us go on a massive losing streak, confidence low, but it's actually worked the other way around. We've sorted ourselves out. We've made ourselves a bit harder to break down. The three at the back formation seems to be working. Some of the players we brought in the summer are settling in now. We've been playing without a striker for a month. We finally got a striker in. That's given the crowd a lift. And at the moment, we've got one of the best players in the Premier League in Jack Grealish. He's just absolutely unplayable at the moment. And as long as he stays fit, we've got a massive chance of ending the season well.
It was impressive to see him, how well he came out of that kind of floppy-haired blonde contender for an England squad off with James Maddison. Wonderful assist for Matt Target's goal.
Yeah, I mean, they're both fantastic players. There should be room for both Maddison and Grealish in the England squad. But I watch Jack play every week. I know how good he is. And he was excellent in the Championship last season. But it's just the productivity he's got now in the Premier League. He's taken his game up another level. He's found another gear that you wouldn't have perhaps known was there. I mean, I think he's been involved in 16 goals across the entirety of the season so far in terms of goal and assists, which is incredible in a struggling team. And if you just watch him, his dribbling and his close ball control has obviously always been a standout attribute. But his passing is something that goes completely unnoticed. The weight of the pass is perfect every time. The timing of the pass, the technique of the ball he put in for Samatta in the second half that he should have done better with. It was just Kevin De Bruyne-esque. And Jack Grealish, for me, he's not just got to be in the England squad. I think he's got to be in the England team, because there is nobody else like him in the English game.
Right. Just don't mess up his hair afterwards, though, eh?
No, he doesn't like that. He doesn't like his hair being touched.
Right. Bournemouth this weekend. How are you feeling about that, Dan?
I'm I've gone the other way now. A month ago, I was dreading games, thinking we're not looking good here. Now I'm excited. We're on a decent run. To win that would be massive, because obviously you want to keep teams down there and try and build yourselves a little bit of a buffer. We drew with Brighton a few weeks ago. We beat Watford last week with a last gasp victory. So we've generally done well in the games with the teams around us. So I just want to carry that on. And okay, they won their last game, but I think they're struggling with a few injuries. They're having a difficult season at the moment. So we've got to go there and play our football and try and capitalise and build ourselves a bit of a gap, like I say. But I'm confident that the result on Tuesday is only going to be good for us, and it's only going to help us carry on that momentum.
Just finish off then, a difficult opponent for the League Cup final against Man City, who've beaten you in both Premier League games so far with an aggregate score of 9-1. But it's all good, whatever happens after a performance like that.
Yeah, I mean, we played Leicester earlier on in the Premier League season just before Christmas, and they thumped us 4-1. And to be honest, it could have been 7 or 8-1 that day. But what Tuesday's actually done for us, it's proven that we can beat those top six teams. But I don't think we picked up a result against anyone in the upper echelons of the Premier League all season. So just the fact that we've proved that we can bounce back and beat a team that's thumped us already this season, there's no reason now why we can't do the same against Man City. That they're a fantastic team. They can take anyone apart on their day. But they've had days this season where they haven't been fantastic. And you just hope on the big occasion that we catch them on an off day. Right. And we have a good day. So it's a bonus. I don't think many people would have expected us to be travelling back to Wembley this season. So it is a bonus game. But when you get there, you want to win.
Dan Bardell of the 1874 podcast. Duncan, did Villa reach a cup final? I enjoyed this tweet from you. Because, you know, with Dan and the Villa fans made up over their trip to Wembley. But this is an extraordinarily regular appearance for them.
Yes, not always at Wembley.
No.
But Villa are, I mean, Dan referenced it in the chat, that they, you know, they are one of the historic clubs of English football. And they've apart from the 1930s, they've reached a major final.
So 1880s, reached a major final. 1890s? They reached a major final.
1900s, there was the incident with the pigeon, etc. No, but apart from the 1930s, even the 1940s, where there wasn't much football, they still got to the final of the War Cup.
Okay. What was the War Cup?
It was a competition for clubs to play. Obviously, there wasn't the FA Cup or the league.
Right. But it's a cup final.
But it was still a fairly prestigious trophy.
Okay.
But then, ever since then, often just won a decade. The 1980s just won, but it was the European Cup final, which I believe they won. Good to see a Midlands team winning the European Cup, isn't it, Nick? I think it'll be a good day out for Villa. They deserve the win, really. I mean, Leicester, it's a strange one with Leicester. Villa created so many good chances down Leicester's right-hand side. Mm-hmm. And this pod regularly in the last few weeks, we've been praising Ricardo Pereira. But he didn't have a particularly good game. And it felt like Rodgers' kind of tactical tweaking over the last month or so has really not worked out for Leicester. And they've kind of, you know, lost their edge a little bit.
Well, I think they kind of shot this one in the first leg. They kind of the tactical tweaking really kind of actively harmed them in that game. They kind of played three at the back for no particular reason. Rodgers admitted he got the team selection wrong, and during that game 1-1, when they should have really kind of put Villa out of sight. Villa at that point had a lot of injuries. They didn't have a striker. They were playing this kind of fudged forward line with three wingers, and at the time there was this kind of vibe that it doesn't really matter. We've drawn the first leg, but we're so much better than Villa. We'll beat them in the second leg anyway. But as it turns out, it was a kind of huge missed opportunity that first game.
Right. 43 shots across the two legs. Only 2 goals for Leicester. Brendan Rodgers losing a domestic cup game for the first time in 5 years. The last team to beat him in a domestic cup game, who were they? Aston Villa. That's right, Nick. Oh. Yeah, in the FA Cup semi-final 2015. As mentioned there with Dan, Villa heading to Bournemouth at the weekend. Villa currently 2 points clear of the bottom three, which currently features the Cherries. So a huge game, that. And a weekend of huge relegation scraps, because West Ham Brighton, that's going to be big. We'll be hearing more about the Hammers very shortly indeed. After this, how about we get on to the weekend?
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
It's Premier League match week 25 this weekend, with Liverpool now 19 points clear. They have a lead of 19 points, which is bigger than Norwich's points total. Put that in perspective.
They've already got more points this season than Liverpool themselves in 17 previous Premier League campaigns.
Right.
And it's still technically January, and actually January.
Right.
I can confirm it is still January.
Still January.
Yep.
That's not very tight, but things are tighter below the top four, where Man United, Wolves and Spurs are 5th, 6th and 7th, but all level on points. Indeed, there's only 4 points separating everyone from Man United in 5th, all the way down to Newcastle in 14th. Wow.
Wow.
It's going to be rich in drama this weekend, I'm sure. Let's start, though, Nick, with a little bit of league action from Wednesday night. London Stadium, West Ham hosting Liverpool. You were there to witness a result as routine as brushing your teeth or putting the bins out, in your words.
Yeah, it was kind of boring, really. It was Liverpool was
okay.
Liverpool was so there was no sort of tension to the whole thing at all. Liverpool were so much better than West Ham that it was kind of inevitable that they would get a couple of goals at some point.
That said, there were a couple of pretty special saves from
Kind of towards the end. West Ham kind of chiseled out a couple of chances, and Alisson having. And Jurgen Klopp kind of mentioned this at the end of the game. Alisson had very little to do all night and then kind of had to wake up a couple of times towards the end and make these saves. But the other thing that Klopp said at the end was, or after the game, was that he said the hardest thing that Liverpool had to do is basically maintain concentration while they're so dominant. So what he was basically saying is the only thing that can kind of stop them now is them getting bored during games.
Right.
They're so good and they're so much better than anyone else that they could just, you know, be overcome with a sense of tedium and not actually, you know, win the games anymore.
Among the things that were there to excite you, Nick, a great night for Mo Salah.
Yeah, he scored a penalty, delicious pass for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's goal.
Delicious pass.
Well, I'm sure most people have seen it by now, but it was outside of the left foot, curled round and behind the defence. Oxlade-Chamberlain then made a sort of diagonal run in front of the one remaining defender and didn't really have to break stride to score.
Right. Was that the first goal he scored away from home, Mo Salah, this season?
That's his second goal, second league away goal this season. The other one he scored at Bournemouth December.
He's now won 30 Premier League games in a row.
Wow.
Which is more than Declan Rice has ever won in his career. So
slightly unfair comparison. I did enjoy you pointing out, though, you mentioned points totals and that. Liverpool have already won more Premier League games than United's treble winners did in 98-99.
Yes.
And it's still technically January.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it led to a debate as to what suggests a difficult season for a team. Is it a season where it's a relatively low points total for the winning team, so it's been a bit of a scrap? Or is it a massive, like we've seen recently, City getting 100 points and then 98 last season? Is that more indicative of a stronger champion?
Well, what constitutes
champion?
A difficult season for West Ham is being down in 17th place, just one goal of goal difference now, above the bottom three, and in their words, a potentially disastrous drop down to the Championship. They've just posted record losses. There had been some talk that the mood was turning ugly at the London Stadium. How did it sound to you, Nick?
It didn't really sound ugly. It just sounded kind of slightly apathetic. I don't think anyone there really obviously kind of expected them to get anything out of this game. And David Moyes was actually quite pleased with how they played afterwards. It's kind of, you know, if you, I suppose at this point, if you're West Ham and you keep Liverpool down to just 2-0, then that's a sort of a result. There was a lot of talk of, you know, taking positives and whatnot afterwards.
Right.
So
I mean, the only thing you can say is that Fabianski made a number of excellent saves, and the fact that he's back is possibly their biggest card to play in the relegation battle. He's probably the best keeper in the bottom half of the table, I'd suggest.
Yeah, the only two kind of moments of really much animation at all from the home crowd was early on in the game. Fabianski looked like he had gone down injured again, and everyone just kind of held their breath a little bit. And the only other one was when Manuel Lazzini was substituted, and this was greeted with your classic sarcastic cheers from the home crowd, who don't seem particularly happy with his efforts at the moment.
Oh, right, okay. Well, a huge game coming up this weekend for West Ham. As I say, they're right on the edge of the bottom three. Only 2 points above them, though, are Brighton, who will be visiting the London Stadium on Saturday at 3:00. Brighton have a terrific record in the Premier League against West Ham. They've played them.
Doesn't
five...
everyone?
Well, Brighton have played them 5 times, and they've never lost. In fact, the Hammers have led for just 4 minutes across those 5 Premier League games with the Seagulls.
Yeah, it's not ideal, and I think most people have at least managed to lead against Brighton for a bit of time in their spell in the top flight. So it's not looking good. I guess the one bit of hope for West Ham is that February is their traditional best month in the Premier League. Yeah, they've got a 42% win rate in February, but I mean that is it's the shortest month. Brackets less short this year for leap year fans out there, right. But incidentally, four yes. players in Premier League history have got a birthday of February the 29th.
Who are they?
Scott Goldbourne is one. Can't remember the others, but yeah. Apropos of nothing. I mean, maybe West Ham should sign some of them.
Who they have signed, Duncan, is Thomas Suchet of Slavia Prague.
Yeah.
Who was very much key to their enterprising run in the group stages this year.
And they went very deep in the Europa League last year as well
when they knocked out
Sevilla. They gave
and
a lot
Chelsea
of people,
knocked them out, sorry. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
They gave a lot of people a hard time in what was a very difficult group with Barcelona, Dortmund and Inter. Mm. Suchek, I remember, particularly in the two games against Inter, was very good kind of helping their press but also just screening the defence to stopping the opponents getting out.
Right.
As you saw this kind of unfancied Slavia team pin their opponents back. And also, you know, back in the Czech Republic, gets an awful lot of goals from midfield, Suchek. The kind of goal ratio that you'd expect from a striker rather than a midfield player.
Goal ratio like 10 in 19 games.
Also, I saw late last night that West Ham were being linked with Solomon Kalou, which seemed a bit of a roll of the dice.
So he's a transfer that might be made possible by the arrival at Hertha Berlin of former Milan favourite Christoph Piontek.
Yeah, someone who'd been floated around or marketed to Premier League clubs, notably Spurs, I think West Ham as well, but too expensive. I'd forgotten that Kalou was still playing, to be fancy. He does sound like a sort of triple A West Ham signing.
I mean, it does feel very West Ham-y. I mean, for me, Kalou's greatest achievement, he's got the highest number of goals of anyone in Premier League history with an even split of home and away. We were talking about Mo Salah a minute ago. 18 at home, 18 away. That's the sort of consistency West Ham could do with, really.
What about how many of those goals came in February?
I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Okay. It's a huge game this weekend. Even if it doesn't sound like we're taking it seriously, Brighton turning up at West Ham. Brighton have only won one of their last nine Premier League matches. Clearly, they're also in a bit of a desperate predicament. As for Liverpool, things are a bit brighter for them. They are 19 points clear, as we mentioned, winning everything left, right and centre. And they take on Southampton this weekend, whom they have won their last five Premier League encounters against, scoring 13 goals in those games and conceding just two. Crikey.
But Southampton have won their last four Premier League away games, I see. So, you know, very much in the balance, this one.
Yeah, Liverpool's record.
I mean, terrible at home.
Yeah.
just presenting the facts to you, James.
Right.
Going for their 20th home win in a row. I mean, the only thing you can say for Southampton is they're possibly the best spoiling team in the Premier League this season. The six games with the overall lowest pass completion in the Premier League this season have all involved Southampton. So they're very adept at kind of making a game a bit kind of dirty. So that's probably their best option.
Dirty Saints. Mm. Anyway, all right, well, after this, transfers.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Back to Basics wants to know, from the new signings to join the Premier League, who excites you the most? And who are you most disappointed about from the deals that didn't materialise? That's a question, isn't it? Nick?
For no particular reason, I quite like the idea of Stephen Bergwijn.
Yeah, that I was going to say that
Tottenham. I quite like the transfer in that it's not the sort of player that Tottenham particularly need, but they kind of bought him anyway.
Do you think?
Yeah. They, you know, their pressing need is a centre-forward, which who may be coming in, possibly Olivier Giroud.
Giroud. He's just been hanging around, thought he was going to Inter, and then they went cold on him. It's just like, oh.
I quite, if he is interested in moving to Spurs, I quite like him paying absolutely no regard to the sort of inter-London rivalries. You know,
he's doing a reverse William Gallas in many ways.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, Bergwijn's a prospect and obviously massively highly thought of in the Eredivisie where he's been.
Is that
been...
what you've heard it on the Bergwijn?
Well, Giroud's another one to whip up the emotions. Danny Rose going to Newcastle. Did you see that?
Yeah, that pleased me. Newcastle, obviously, one of Andy Thorne's former clubs. So they'll be the first club to field at some point, Thorne and Rose, which is a nice touch.
Yeah. Also, Barcelona, sadly, seeing their bid for Richarlison.
Well, Barcelona seem to be preparing very much for the post-Messi future by turning into kind of Manchester United scattergun approach. And yeah, apparently they're bidding for Willian as well now. So they're just on a spree.
Right. And some talk that Dries Mertens might be pitching up at Stamford Bridge, James.
Yeah, well, Dries' contract is up at the end of the season.
And he's very much one of the players who's been told he can do one, though, by De Laurentiis, the owner.
Well, Dries would like to stay.
Right.
He's got other offers in Italy, notably from Inter. But in terms of if he stays in Serie A, it will be with Napoli. But Napoli, one of the busiest teams in the January transfer window, very much preparing for next summer when it feels like there will be a big clear out. But yeah, Dries had an offer, I think, from Dortmund, who have subsequently gone for Haaland, and has an offer from Chelsea at the moment. I think the issue there is that Napoli have tried to bring in another striker in January and have failed so far. And they have said to Chelsea, look, you can sign him, pay us that money, but you've got to loan him back to us. Mm. And they're like, well, we can kind of just get him for free in the summer. Why would we pay not to have him now? So there's a bit of an impasse there as we record.
Okay, Arsenal are busy. They brought in Pablo Marie.
Yes, the kind of brief will he, won't he transfer that seemed to be off again and on again and
right.
Then was on.
Who's been in the Man City network, so maybe Arteta knows him from that.
Perhaps, yeah, and has been at Flamengo in Brazil.
Played Liverpool in the World Club thing.
Indeed, the World Club thing.
Yeah.
Proudly displayed in the Liverpool treasury.
I like that, though, like a Spanish defender, 26, who's been playing in Brazil. I mean, that sort of thing just doesn't happen all that
hipster.
Often. Yeah, it's very hipster. I like
it. And they might back that signing up with the Cedric Suarez from Saints. Ooh, you're wincing, Duncan.
Well, our friend Carl Anker has not been impressed by Suarez this season. And Southampton are willing to let him go out because they've got Kyle Walker-Peters in. But then I guess Arsenal are below Southampton in the league, so that's kind of the way that transfers work, isn't it?
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. Although whether they will be after Saints play Liverpool this weekend, we shall see. We'll talk a bit more about the top four race after this.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Can anyone catch Chelsea? There they are in fourth, 8 points behind Leicester, who, as fate would have it, they face this weekend. But Chelsea, 6 points above three sides, Man United, Wolves and Spurs. Interesting fixtures this weekend, James. Not only are Chelsea visiting Leicester, but Spurs take on Man City and Man United and Wolves face each other?
Crikey.
It is crikey.
Yeah, Chelsea-Leicester, I remember the start of the season was a good game. Very much a game of two halves, James, Chelsea taking the lead through Mason Mount. Remember, it was seen as kind of an example of the pressing game that Frank Lampard wanted to impose on the team because he stole the ball from Ndidi on the edge of his penalty area. And Chelsea should have been home and hosed by half-time in that game. Instead, they weren't because clearly Brendan Rodgers at half-time gave one of those really outstanding team talks. And Leicester, I think, in the end came away from that game, particularly James Maddison's influence. You know, we were talking earlier about Grealish. Well, this was very much Maddison kind of at his best, pulling the strings in midfield, influencing things. And I think Leicester felt they should have come away with that game. So if it's as entertaining as that one was back in August, James, it should be a great watch.
Fingers crossed. The Foxes with one or two issues at the moment. Not only were they beaten Tuesday night in the League Cup, but they've also lost two of their last three Premier League home games, though they did get a 4-1 win in the other home match against West Ham last time out.
Chelsea have a great record at the King Power as well. They've won five of their last seven, and that's, you know, because they had that tendency of just pinching players from Leicester, I think.
Okay, all right. Spurs, as I mentioned, taking on Man City in what is their first time they'll be facing each other at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium since the drama in the Champions League, Nick, last season.
The game where City were kind of very much on top. And who scored? Was it Son who scored the only goal in that game? And yep. Harry Kane got his kind of annual ankle injury.
Scenes that won't be repeated anyway this time around, because he's not of this fixture. 23rd meeting in all competitions between Mourinho and Pep Guardiola, because that's going to be, I'm sure, a big subtext to this game. Rarely have they come in kind of in quite such an underwhelming fashion, I suppose, because Mourinho, the results haven't really been coming for him there at Spurs. And City, 19 points off the lead in the Premier League.
Do we think that they will, Tottenham will play as they did against Liverpool and just kind of, you know, grimly dig in to limit the damage, or will they actually play football? Who knows?
I don't know.
I mean, for me, the big thing in this game is that we really need Tottenham to concede a penalty, because if this Edison taking penalties thing is going to kick in, then this, it has to happen soon. It will get forgotten otherwise. And I really want to see Edison start to take penalties in the Premier League. But Sergio Aguero is fit and in form now, so you suspect that won't actually happen.
Also back fit and very much playing these days, Aymeric Laporte, which is huge for City.
Yeah, I mean, he's won 42 of his first 49 Premier League games. The record in their first 50 is also 42 by Drogba, Arjen Robben and Edison. So if Laporte plays and Man City win, he'll set a new record. And that, I think that just illustrates how crucial and integral he is to that team. You know, when he plays, City are solid and creative in equal measure. When he doesn't, you've got KDB, you know, being exasperated at Otamendi. So right. It really is that key.
He was also exasperated after this game back in August, because City, and this has been a theme of their season, as well as their defensive frailties, if you like, is that they create so much. They had, 30 shots against Spurs. They hit the bar. I think Lloris had to make a series of really big saves. And yet Spurs had 3 shots, 2 of which went in, and they ended up drawing 2-2. So another time where City, so dominant, and yet weren't able to clinch the deal. De Bruyne was fantastic in that game back in August as well.
I mean, just on that, City this season on XG are 13 goals ahead of any other team in the Premier League. So Liverpool second, unsurprisingly, but City are 13 ahead. So Liverpool do just enough to get the win. City can be incredible, score 6, 7, 8 goals, but then often we'll lose a match. And it is, you know, a league is won through consistency. Nice. And that's what Liverpool showing.
I've got a curiously good feeling about Spurs in this one, actually. As you mentioned, they did come away with a result last time out, but City also have shown something of what you were talking about earlier with Liverpool almost getting bored. They're a little bit in limbo in terms of objectives in the Premier League right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're just kind of, they're not going to finish any lower than second. They're not going to finish any higher than second, realistically. They're sort of in this kind of box-ticking exercise for the rest of the season. For Tottenham, though, it's the first game of the post-Christian Eriksen era, which right. Jose Mourinho has obviously kind of darkly hinted has been this black cloud hanging over the club for the past 6 months or something like that. Now that is lifted, the mood will also lift, and, you know, maybe they'll be free to express themselves. Now this situation is not bogging them down anymore.
The prospects look bright going forward. Lo Celso looking like he could be a really valuable player to build a midfield around, and Bergwijn, as we mentioned, a very dangerous threat coming in off the right.
Yeah, and if they do get some kind of centre forward in before the weekend, it sort of makes sense in Jose Mourinho's team to have the big man up top. There's, as well as Giroud, there is kind of talk of another bid for Willian Jose, I believe. So who knows whether that will actually come to fruition. But yeah, the things do look a little bit brighter for Tottenham.
Okay.
All right. About transfers, which really catch the eye.
Yeah.
Sheffield United just closing a deal for Sander Berg.
Right.
The Norwegian midfielder from Genk,
who
for quite some time, the last couple of years, has been generating quite a lot of hype. Certainly been linked with a lot of very good clubs in Italy, like Fiorentina and that sort of thing. 21 years old, towering midfielder, 6'3". Interesting signing there. I like it.
And there was also a lot of hype around him on, I think it was Tuesday, when there were reports that Manchester United were trying to gazump the deal.
Wow.
Because he'd apparently been spotted going into Carrington.
Ah.
And as it turns out, it was just a 15-year-old reserve goalkeeper who looked a bit like him.
Right.
And someone had just gone.
Is this what United's transfer strategy is? Just to, like, try and gazump kind of West and South Yorkshire clubs last minute?
It was just someone who kind of was peering through the window of a car and just went a bit early and decided that it was this guy, but as it turns out, it wasn't.
Tricky thing, trying to stay ahead of the news.
Yeah.
As transfer deadline day rolls around, Man United, meantime, are taking on Wolves. It's late on Saturday. Duncan, we've talked a lot about clubs getting their first win at Old Trafford since time immemorial. What's the situation there vis-a-vis Wolves winning away at Man United?
Yeah, Wolves, one of the clubs who haven't ended their Old Trafford hoodoo recently. Right. They haven't won there since 1980.
Okay.
Or since Pac-Man came out, depending on delete as applicable. And obviously, if you like seeing overrated icons running in straight lines, etc., etc. But this seems like a good opportunity, you'd think, for Wolves to... I mean, it's classic United, you know, a couple of steps forward, it's time for another step back, you feel, right, in the narrative.
But Wednesday in itself was a step forward and a step back at the same time, because they won and went out of the cup.
That's the cup.
If you are a commentator preparing your intro for this game on Saturday, you might like to know that Too Much Too Young by The Specials was number one last time Wolves were number one at Old Trafford. Mm. How about that? Hard to get a read on Wolves at the moment, no?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, they've been very low on numbers recently, but they're kind of making some signings. I'm not sure whether it's actually gone through yet, but they're apparently in the process of signing Daniel Podence, a winger who was at Olympiacos, who, as a coincidence, is a Jorge Mendes client.
So, is that right?
So, yeah, Nuno has been quite agitated recently about how sort of thin his resources are, but now they're getting a few players through the door.
Right. Last time we saw Wolves was the midweek game against Liverpool, when they were terrorising Liverpool's back line, or at least Adama Traore was. How do you fancy Man United's chances against him, Nick?
Well, I mean, Adama Traore, the prospect of him running at Luke Shaw is a terrifying one, so maybe Luke Shaw won't play, maybe Brandon Williams will play.
Is that any more comforting to you?
A little bit.
Right.
Not much.
Probably won't be very comforting to either Shaw or Williams. I mean, to go back to the Pac-Man theme, the bit where you can eat the special one bit and start flashing and eat the ghosts is possibly what it feels like to play football as Adama Traore.
Brilliant, yeah. You could. I mean, if younger listeners who've never played Pac-Man will be unfamiliar with the sensation. On a less Pac-Man orientated note, anything you wanted to throw at us, James, on this?
Well, actual detail,
yep.
James, is that when Traore came on in the reverse fixture, he did actually change the game because he was running at Shaw that time, won a free kick, and it was from that free kick that Wolves got back into the game. And yeah, he was not, I'd say, cutting inside at will, but certainly he was giving a Wolves side that had failed to create anything to trouble United, he was troubling them. You remember that United, that was at the start of the season where Pogba decided that he wanted to take the penalty over Rashford. And there was that discussion, and then he saw his penalty saved.
Was it this game here?
It was, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Feels like a long time ago.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. Much like the start of this podcast, eh, listen? Right. There's still loads more to come, though. We've got big games down the bottom end of the table. Also, after this, quick bit of Championship news from Nick Miller.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Championship news. A full round of fixtures on Tuesday night. Nick, what happened?
Leeds came up from 2-0 down against Millwall to win, and they went top of the table above West Brom, who continued their soiling of the bed. Those two teams had been so far clear that it was almost not worth talking about anyone else, but West Brom now... haven't won in the last six. They've lost the last two.
Wow.
They're now in second place. Nottingham Forest.
Nottingham Forest, Nick, you say?
Nottingham Forest. They beat Brentford 1-0. Fairly scrappy game by all accounts, but they are now just 2 points behind West Brom.
Just 2 points? Wow.
It's all getting very real.
And how does that make Forest fans feel?
Sort of nervous. Don't like to get. I can't speak for everyone, but don't like to get our hopes up.
You put a tweet out asking how people who aren't Forest supporters feel about Forest going up and why it is that they're held in such regard, which to me seems a bit obvious. Why? Well, what kind of reactions did you get though?
Well, I think the reactions you'd expect. It's all kind of sort of nostalgia for the times when Forest were good and won European Cups, and even when they weren't winning European Cups and just had a lot of kind of players that you associate it with early years of the Premier League. And indeed,
Lars Bohinen.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Ian Wone, your Scott Gemmells, that sort of thing. And I did put that tweet and then shamelessly turned it into content for the totallyfootballshow.com.
Okay.
And there is a piece on the website now based around that idea about how sort of fuzzy nostalgia makes people want Forest to be in the Premier League.
Okay, yeah, you'll just write anything to take your mind off the the reality of what might be about to happen. Extraordinary.
Yeah.
How long has it been?
It's been 21 years. 1999 was the last time Forest were relegated.
Crikey.
Was that the Pierre Van Hooijdonk? No, that was...
It was the Pierre Van Hooijdonk strike season, also, of course, featuring the 8-1 defeat to Manchester United and famously Ron Atkinson getting in the wrong dugout against Arsenal.
Yeah.
Brilliant. There's a Totally Football League show that's out right now, hosted by Matt Davis Adams, in which they round up all the Tuesday night action from the Championship and all the Football League news. I'm sure featuring in there is Wayne Rooney scoring his first goal for Derby as they lost away at struggling Luton.
Yes, some strident takes from Adrian Clarke on that show about how, well, Wayne Rooney may have scored, but Philip Cocu, their manager, is no good, according to Adrian Clarke, and they should probably make a change.
Who would take over, I wonder?
Up next, we're looking at the sides, trying to steer well clear of all that Championship business, the battle at the bottom. Listener, the essential guide to what's happening this weekend continues as we tackle the drama at the bottom and some other stuff too. As I mentioned before, five teams in the relegation scrap separated by just 2 points. Watford, Bournemouth, West Ham, Villa and Brighton. So Villa visiting Bournemouth and West Ham have Brighton. Amongst the other teams down there, Norwich go to Newcastle. There's been so many goals. Last two meetings between these two teams at St James's Park, you had a 4-3 win for Newcastle and a 6-2 victory for the Magpies.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you can't imagine that many goals this time given Newcastle's reliance on defender goals this season, already 12. I kind of looked at this fixture and thought, oh, it feels like a very easterly fixture there, doesn't it? Norwich, Newcastle. Had a look at a map. No.
What do you mean easterly? Because they're both on the eastern side of the
country. Yeah, but what transpired, look, using maps, that Newcastle was further west than Oxford, which...
That is remarkable, isn't it? Because of the way the planet of the country is
tilted. Well, yeah, but then even further, Bristol, right,
yes,
is further east than Edinburgh. Then that's the one when I just closed down the maps and I said, the maps lie. I don't believe this, but it's true. So there you go.
Extraordinary.
Wow.
This new learning amazes me. Aston Villa, returning to another fixture, just because it's a curious stat, Aston Villa, who are at Bournemouth, are the only team, James, this season, yet to score a headed goal in the Premier League.
Wow.
No team, before you ask, has ever gone a whole season without scoring a header in the Premier League. Will they be the first?
Do you think that was, you know, when Dean Smith was making his targets for the season?
Right.
That was...
Go the whole season without a...
Top one, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, Jack Grealish doesn't like his hair getting messed up, as we
It's true. Did you see Hatem Ben Arfa? He signed for Valladolid.
Yes.
And was doing keepy-uppies, and they said, can you do some headers as well? Mm. And he was like, no. I don't want to mess up my hair. So, I mean...
There you go. Each of Newcastle's...
Solange Knowles.
Returning to Newcastle and Norwich, each of Newcastle's last three Premier League goals have come when? In the 90th minute or later. Mm. Watford are taking on Everton. Watford's last Premier League outing was that last gasp defeat at Villa 10 days ago, which saw them return to the bottom three. In the other fixtures, Crystal Palace host Sheffield United.
Yeah, Palace, they feel like they're not quite in the relegation battle, but they're not far off it. And I think Palace fans were hoping this transfer window would have been a bit more productive. If you'd gone to all Palace home games in the Premier League this season, you'd have seen your team, brackets Crystal Palace, score before half-time once. And it just, that feels very indicative of their season. It's just not quite got going. They've got the oldest team on average in the Premier League this season, 29 years.
Manager on average as well.
Very much so. It feels like this is the, particularly if Zaha goes next summer, this is the end of this iteration of Palace.
Do you think? Only Watford have scored fewer goals than them in the Premier League this season.
Palace is signing Nathan Ferguson from West Brom.
Okay.
Fullback, 19 years old, who AC Milan were very keen to sign. So Palace have beaten Milan to the signing of a young English fullback.
Nice.
There's also still lingering talk that they might be signing Yannick Carrasco as well. I don't know whether that's kind of going to happen, but he's currently in China, and reports are that his club are playing hardball. But
have you heard that from a Tarasco source?
Oh.
Some extraordinary work on the transfer front. Thanks, everybody. Also this weekend, and this is a fixture that evokes strong emotions, Burnley taking on Arsenal. which you'd kind of think would be the kind of fixture where Arsenal would struggle. And yet, Duncan?
No, not at all.
You'd be wrong, wouldn't
They've won their last 10 league games against Burnley.
They're actually Burnley's bogey team.
They are. Yeah, I mean, I think there's this kind of muscle memory of Arsenal for that period when they struggled just for a couple of seasons away at Bolton.
And Stoke.
Yeah, and Stoke. And people have extrapolated that this any trip north of the Watford Gap is carnage for Arsenal. But absolutely no problem. The biggest problem they've had in this fixture in recent years, 2016, October, the train carrying a lot of Arsenal fans going up there hit a herd of cows, and a lot of fans missed the match.
Right.
And curiously, that game...
I think it probably... I mean, the cows fared worse in the exchange.
There was some beef, yeah. Curiously, as the game then took place, Burnley... Sean Dyche's Burnley, aggressive, in-your-face Burnley, only conceded 2 fouls in the whole match, which is the fewest Burnley have ever conceded in a Premier League game. So I don't know whether that was a kind of gesture to the cows, or whether it was just they couldn't get into the game. But yeah, another easy...
It's unheard of.
Heard it on the bovine.
Right.
Two strikes, James.
Yeah. Okay. Arsenal are fresh from that win that we mentioned a long time ago at the start of this podcast in the Cup, 2-1 at Bournemouth. Also, they've got, and this is huge, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang back from suspension. He has scored 7 goals in 4 Premier League appearances against Burnley. So that's good.
True, although they haven't lost any of the games where he's been missing this season. Hmm. And obviously, Martinelli is the new darling of the Arsenal fans, looking to be only the 4th player in Premier League history, age under 19, to score in 3 games in a row. And the other 3, and this is a bit of a kind of haunting look at how players can start very well and maybe not achieve what they looks like they were going to do, are Michael Owen, so reasonable career, Francis Jeffers, and Danny Cadamartri.
Those are the fixtures this weekend in the Premier League. Very shortly, we'll be answering some of your questions. First, though, Paddy Power.
Hello, everybody. This is producer Ben. I'm on the line with Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, let's look ahead to the Premier League this weekend, starting with Arsenal at Burnley. Now, according to statistics, Arsenal always beat Burnley. So, are Arsenal going to beat Burnley?
So it seems. I actually genuinely didn't know Arsenal had a hoodoo over someone like this. I thought they were only ever the victims of such things. So it is nice. And they are, as you might expect, favourites for this one. They're odds on, but only just to win at 10-11. They're clearly very welcoming hosts, so 11-4 to get the 3 points, and the draw is 5-2.
All right, moving on. Wolves haven't won at Old Trafford for over 40 years, but can they do it this Saturday?
Blimey. I remember when records like these were falling almost every week under David Moyes. They can't mean left, surely, but we do think this one will continue. United, at home, are not odds on to win the game, and that's indicative of their current situation, although perhaps not the only thing. It's 11-10 for a Red Devils win, 5-2 that Wolves break their winless jinx, and 11-5 that is a draw.
And finally, Liverpool versus Southampton. A huge ask, but Saints have won 4 of their last 5 on the road. Can they make it 5 out of 5? Can Danny Ings do something against his old team?
How do I stretch the word no out for half a minute? Perhaps the numbers say it best. Liverpool are 1-4 to win this one. Southampton are 9-1. For reference, you can get shorter odds than that on the following things happening. Liverpool to score 4 more goals, which is 3-1. Mo Salah to score at least twice, which is 7-2, or Jordan Henderson scoring, which is 6-1.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply, and when the fun stops, stop. Madrid derby coming up on Saturday at 3 o'clock. It's Real Madrid against Atletico. If you want to watch that on your dodgy stream, you illegal person, you. Midweek, there was drama in the Cup, wasn't there?
Yeah,
Milan continuing their excellent run of form since Ibrahimovic joined. And he scored a goal this time.
He did, yeah. The lift that Zlatan has brought to Milan, I don't think can be underestimated. I think we mentioned on Monday's, one of the European shows, of how attendances have climbed. And also he's just getting performances out of some of his teammates who hadn't really done anything up until his arrival. Players like Ante Rebic, Castillejo. As well. So they're through to the Cup semi-finals after sort of pouring more misery on Torino, who'd lost by 7 goals against Atlanta at the weekend, were 2-1 up going into the final 5 minutes in this game and then concede in stoppage time and then lose in extra time to Milan. And then Inter also through to the semi-finals of the Cup.
Yeah.
Christian Eriksen coming on.
Great goal from Barella.
Yeah, fantastic goal from him. And yeah, see if Inter can actually build on all these signings that they've made. Moses came on as well.
Yeah.
So not an entirely new look Inter, although they are saying that they might start playing 3-4-3 rather than 3-5-2. Push the likes of Eriksen or even Alexis up next to the likes of Lautaro and Lukaku.
Right.
But yeah, bit of a blow for Inter in the disciplinary hearings that were going on with what Lautaro will miss the derby coming up against Milan. But yeah, both Milan clubs into the semi-finals. So
yeah, Napoli-Inter is one semi-final. Milan-Juve is the other. So exciting, Nick. Exciting. Also as exciting is the news that Nicholas Bentner is going to be in a reality TV show.
Yeah, Love Island.
With his girlfriend, Feline Rupstorff. In Scotland, Rangers and Celtic were in action on Wednesday night. They both won. Prior to the game, Rangers striker Alfredo Morelos arrived home to find somebody under his car doing things to it. Police in Scotland are investigating. Crikey. Let's have a look through the mailbag. Phil says, inspired by West Ham, what is the greatest disparity between the quality of a team and the stadium in which they play? Did you have a suggestion, Duncan?
I do, and it was a team coincidentally played at West Ham Stadium, and they were called Thames AFC, and they played a few seasons in the English League in the early 30s. Tiny team, but they played at this kind of old stadium, Custom House, had a capacity of 120,000.
Really?
Yeah. They played at this stadium that had been built for greyhound and speedway racing.
Okay.
So that was obviously very popular for betting and stuff in the 1930s. But they didn't have any of that on at the weekend. So they decided to form this club. And they called it Thames AFC, presumably because they were near the River Thames. Good blue sky thinking there. And then, they hardly got anyone to turn up. They weren't very successful.
Oh.
It was the biggest club stadium ever in the history of English football. But they averaged about 2,500 spectators per game. If you want to see people rattling around the ground, I suggest that's possibly the greatest example ever. If I had a Gary Sparrow-style time machine, I would probably go back and watch Thames AFC.
Right, you'd be one of the few people doing it. Juve, more recently, when they played Champions League games at the Stadio degli Alpi, which is capacity of, what, about 77,000 or something, would sometimes draw crowds in the kind of like four figures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful sighting at that stadium as well. You know, you'd obviously find yourself sat and your view obscured by something,
fog,
yeah,
football, any of those things. Duncan, while you're at it, Arigit would like to know if it's just them or have goals from direct free kicks really reduced in recent months. Messi seems to do it regularly, but I don't recall, says Arigit, seeing many free kick goals this season.
Because Messi was so good last season that sort of stuck in people's mind. But if you go back to the last three seasons across the top five leagues in Europe, conversion rate and goals, direct free kick goals per game in 2017-18, 6% conversion, 0.07. Last season, 6% conversion and 0.07. And this season, conversion rate of 6% and 0.07. So exactly the same.
Brilliant. Okay, so exactly the same. Mark Small, does Italy lose its collective head and bizarre signings get made on deadline day the way it happens in England?
Hell yes. I think there's even more hysteria there than there is here.
There's that hotel in Milan, isn't there?
Yeah, they've had to move hotels because the Atta Hotel, where all these deals take place, I think they usually open it up for the final 2 or 3 days of the window. The Wi-Fi was terrible.
I see. Well, that's important.
Mina Raiola was walking around, yeah, sort of swearing.
Well, so all clubs do their deals in the same place?
Because you need that proximity.
Kind of a Hotel Babylon vibe.
And there's lots of sort of classic kind of Italian films, usually around football, where every club has its own kind of room or booth or and that sort of thing. And you go in, you do meetings, and then there's kind of, you know, sort of people throwing contracts in the air and all that sort of thing. But that has just started. It's at the Sheraton this time, if you're ever, you know, in Milan. I think it's the Sheraton in the city rather than the one at Malpensa.
Okay.
But yeah, no, they go crazy, much more so than they do. And it's actually much more interesting, I think, over there, because clubs tend to panic. And I mean, Fiorentina aren't panicking, but they're signing like 10 players as we speak. So they live for it. It's not like Germany where it's done.
Not like Germany, says James Horncastle.
Yep, thank you.
Fantastic. That brings us to the end of today's show. Looking forward to hear what late transfer deals there are in Italy and the UK ahead of the Friday 11 o'clock deadline. We'll be back on Sunday evening to round up that and, of course, the weekend's action ready for you on Monday morning in the Totally Football Show. Many thanks to you, James Horncastle.
Pleasure, James.
And Nick Miller.
Thank you, James.
And Duncan Alexander.
Thank you.
And you, listener. To you. We'll be back, as I say, bright and early Monday morning. Do have a good weekend till then. From us all, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Hello, I'm Emma.
And I'm Jeffers.
And we're the Series Linked podcast. Subscribe to our channel for all of the biggest TV interviews.
And to stay on top of all the latest telly.
It said Gervais sometimes fluffs his lines, like I'd have left them in.
It's a stunning place to shoot.
I'll put something up on Instagram and then somebody will post going, oh, you look at you lazy-eyed and you're ugly, aren't you?
And on the way in upcoming episodes, we speak to Imelda Staunton, David Baddiel, Carl Pilkington and many more. Just search for Series Linked. That's Series Linked.
Join Ruby Walsh, Paddy Power, Tom Nugent, and a whole host of great guests each week on Paddy Power's new racing podcast, From the Horse's Mouth. Tune in for analysis, interviews, and a bit of crack. Ruby is the expert, Tom holds it together, and Paddy, well, Paddy's funding the whole thing, so he insisted that he gets to be involved. The first episode is available to download now.
Muddy Knees Media.